You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR. Now here are your hosts, Nathan Zagura and Matt Wilhelm.
And a happy Wednesday to you and yours from the Dog Bowl in Berea, Ohio. Jason Gibbs, Matt Wilhelm, and this is Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR for a Wednesday. It is a bustling hive here, Matt Wilhelm.
It is. There's a lot going on. The salespeople are back in the building now. There are a speckling of players who probably never left in here working out, and so it's good to see.
Yeah, it's very good to see a lot of people. Everybody's getting ready. The fields are getting ready out there. They're working on the practice fields
right now. The helmets have been painted out in
Lou Groza Boulevard. Zigzag around Lou Groza Boulevard today. You can feel it in the air. Training camp is coming. Look, there's Mo Pedman walking right by the window.
Rolling right by.
It was Taco Day downstairs.
It was. He's here for a reason.
All right. We're going to take your phone calls, and we will get to those. We will get to your tweets today as well. Coming up on today's show, we continue with our opponent previews on Cleveland Browns Daily at 1:30. Ken LaVica from ESPN 106.3, co-host of the home team from 10 to noon, covers the Dolphins for ESPNWestPalm.com. He will join us to preview them. A lot to talk about with regards to the Dolphins and a lot of things happening with them. Our CBD replay resumes today at 2 o'clock. We go back into the audio vault. And we hear from Danny Shelton as he sits down with Nathan and Matt to recap the first season and what the offseason has been like with the new coaching changes and what we can expect from Danny Shelton in 2016. We'll also go around the league with Dave DiNatale at about 2:30 today. 216-578-0850 to get on board with us. You can tweet at us at Browns_daily or at BGSU Gibbs. The big news of the day, unfortunately.
Not good news.
For a second straight day, we've got news out of Berea. And
ironically, Jim and I set the tempo on Monday, just kind of reviewing, coming back from vacation.
Feeling good.
No news is good news.
It's been quiet.
And it's been quiet. And for consecutive days since we opened our mouths, bad things have happened.
Yeah. As long as this can stop here in the next 48 hours before I go away for 5 days, that would be great. The news of the day, as Matt said, is not good. Browns defensive end Desmond Bryant underwent surgery yesterday to repair a torn pectoral muscle sustained during a workout last week. Full recovery expected. He will miss a significant amount of time and will unlikely be able to return for the 2016 season. A devastating loss to this defense before camp even gets going.
Here. Absolutely. And hearing this news myself, I immediately, called Nathan, and I wanted to share it with him if he hadn't heard it, because he is on the West Coast, so maybe he was waking up to the same news that I was finding out here on East Coast time. But he, Des Bryant's agent is friends with Nathan and informed Nathan about 24 to 36 hours ago about the injury and how bad it was and how it would affect Des, and they both were, saying he's not going to play this season. So I wouldn't be surprised if in the coming days following his surgery, if they don't put him on, the injured reserve list to open up that roster spot for someone else that can be used, for the Cleveland Browns that will actually participate. But if there was probably three guys on defense I didn't want to lose, Des Bryant would be one of them. Because I just feel like in this system, with his experience with both Hugh Jackson and Ray Horton, and the position that five technique, that weak side defensive end plays in a 3-4 scheme, and how productive Des was, even, I'll say it, on some bad defenses, in the past couple of years, he was our most productive, consistent player, and to lose that guy that I thought was primed to have a big year and really open things up for Kruger and Ogba and Orchard on the outside, it really, really stinks, because he was a great athlete. He was productive. He was a vet, and I thought he led by example. And some of the young players along that defensive line were definitely following his lead. Now you look to, well, who's the vet in that room now that Des is really gone?
I mean, it is growing up time quickly for a number of players on that defense, and now, with Armani Bryant's suspension, and with Des Bryant being out. you know, arguably the strength of this defense is taking a big, big hit here to kick off the season. And, you know, the problem is, too, it's the timing of the injury. It's not like it happened in March, you know, when free agency was just starting, or in April when free agency was just getting going, where you have time to go out and maybe you change your free agent philosophy a little bit because you know you've got to get someone to replace him. I mean, you got 2 weeks till the season starts.
Yeah.
There is not a lot out there that you're going to bring in that's going to make a big
impact. No, there's not. And I think, you know, Carl Nassib was the guy probably drafted to play that position. And I thought that, you know, Carl would learn a lot from Dez and watching his approach to the 16 opportunities they have to compete in those games, and would play sparingly in that role, especially in the base defense, but would be more of a specialty player. Now, Carl Nassib is one of those guys that has to grow up very quickly. Even talking to Nathan, you know, what are we going to do? Is Xavier Cooper going to be a guy athletically enough who I thought was going to have a good, you know, play a lot of snaps, but wasn't going to be a starter, was going to be a little bit more of a specialty or a package type of guy to use his speed and the get off in that first step we've heard so much about. He now is a guy that might have been trying to get to kind of put on weight to be a three technique behind John Hughes, who may kind of want to lean down and stay, you know, in that 290, 295-pound range instead of getting above 300 to play that five technique position, which has to be a little bit more athletic.
Yeah, I mean, you have Xavier Cooper, you have John Hughes, you mentioned Nassib. Dylan Wynn could factor in there maybe a little bit. I mean,
so is John Hughes our highest tenured defensive lineman right now?
Yeah, because John Hughes is the leader of the room, and John Hughes has had his shares of nicks and scrapes, and
he definitely has
and whatnot.
And I would have thought prior to this injury that there's a lot of questions about the linebackers, not so much about the players, but who's gonna play and how productive can they be in this scheme. There's of course a lot of questions about the defensive backfield. What Joe Hayden are we going to get back? We know we have Tremont and Justin Gilbert and the strides that he made this offseason. Pierre Desir has been taking snaps at safety. You've got Ibrahim Campbell and Raheem Moore and Jordan Poyer. Are those guys going to be able to sustain starting 16 football games? So the group that I had the most confidence in on that defense was that defensive line. And I got to say, losing a productive Dez Bryant as a vet and as a leader, they took a significant step back in my eyes. And it's no knock against anybody else, but I just question everyone else in that room, especially in their ability to now, as we saw Cam Irving have to do last year, even as a rookie, change positions and have to learn something new. And it's interesting to see, because the one thing I have faith in is Ray Horton and this scheme. The scheme will work, and even Ray sitting here told us the scheme has been proven everywhere it's been.
Sure.
And now we need those players to step up and produce in that scheme.
216-578-0850, the number to get on board with us today. Are you more concerned now about the defense than maybe you were the offense? I mean, the offense has always been a question mark here recently. You know, the ability to score points. You and Jim talking about it the other day. You know, the ability to score 10 points in a game has been a struggle for this football team here recently. That doesn't seem to be as much of an issue right now as how are you going to stop the other team from scoring points.
Right. And I think if I were a part of this defense or I were in this locker room, I think as you report and the message that should reverberate throughout training camp is a lot of guys need to step up and have their best years. A lot of growing up, and you said it, a lot of growing up has to happen throughout the 25 days that will make up training camp and the reps that they get in those preseason games, because guys are going to be moving around because these coaches now are shifting, you know, players around to see can they play here and are they sustainable at these certain new positions that they're learning.
Yeah, well, and you've got coaches that have watched tape and after tape that have broken everything down, and they think they've got it all figured out, and 2 weeks before camp it's like, I just throw this piece of paper away. Let's start over.
It really
everything
is.
Changes.
Yeah, and everything changes. You become a different team when the San Francisco 49ers, you know, lost Patrick Willis to a foot injury. You just operate differently when you lose a contributing starter of that stature. And I know that Dez Bryant is not a linebacker, and he's not maybe to the level of Patrick Willis as the type of player, but Dez was a for sure starter on this defense. So one of our for sure starters has been taken out of the mix. And now you may have to operate a little bit differently, at least in the outset of this football season, schematically, on how comfortable or how far can we dig into that playbook, because we've got new guys playing new positions that need to get their feet wet, just getting beat around or playing well in that position to the point where Ray and his staff feels comfortable doing more. So I wouldn't be surprised if we're a little bit more vanilla now that we've lost a guy like Dez.
And that's where I was going next. You know, how does it impact the linebacking group? How does it impact the secondary? Do you have to change things that you're doing over there to compensate for what's going on?
Absolutely. You definitely do. And I think I keep saying production. Dez is a productive guy. He's a disruptor. He's a big, long, athletic, you know, player that guards and tackles have to deal with. And when you have a guy like that, it you gain a half a man. So if we brought an inside, you know, inside middle dog cross, you know, Kirksey might be able to work on an edge because of a player like Dez occupying a guard, and they have to be worried about him. So I guess I question who it is we move there and how quickly they can adapt to playing that position, because I think we lost a great athlete and a productive player and a vet who knows and has started 16 football games in a season before. Because if you move Cooper there, he's started maybe a speckling of games in his career last year, maybe even none. You get Nassib, he's a rookie who may or may not be ready for the physicality of playing that position, and even his body might not be ready. I'd like to see Nassib, and I know he's been here working, so props to him for all that, but put on 10 or 15 pounds, get up to 290, because you're now, it's not playing on the edge anymore where you can beat a guy with speed. You're in there with the big boys, and you got to be able to play big boy football. And we lost a guy that was comfortable playing physical big boy football on a down in, down out basis, and now we're asking someone else to step up in that spot.
Very reliable player, Desmond Bryant, in his 3 years with the Browns so far. 14 and a half sacks,
right,
including six last year.
And how many starts in those 3 years?
12, 15, and 14 last year.
Exactly. That's dependable. My point. Very dependable.
Which I'm surprised by, only because I know that his first year he had the heart issue.
Yep.
And thank God that got detected and taken care of. I thought he missed more games than that.
Right.
You don't realize how dependable, like, he was there every game.
Yeah, and I wouldn't have and maybe sometimes, to your point, why he might have felt like he disappeared has a lot to do with the mentality of our past defensive coordinators. We were shuffling
Correct.
Bodies, keeping people fresh, and no one was able to get comfortable because we were trying to outsmart people. And where I think the mentality of this staff is, we're going to find out who our best 12 to 15 players are on offense and defense, and you're going to see them start and contribute for this football team. Instead of trying to trick people and out-scheme people, we're going to go out and play football with our best players. And that's what I'm, to kind of transition into training camp, that's what I'm most excited about. There's 15 players that are going to make up, that are going to either start or make up a majority of the playing time on offense and defense. Who are those 15? And now that we've lost Dez Bryant, you know, he's off the radar, and you've got to have, who's that other 50? So now you're down to 14. Who's the 15th guy that's going to play a lot of snaps and potentially learn a new position on this defense?
It'll be quite the shoes to fill. Dez Bryant more than likely out for the year with that torn pectoral muscle. And we want to hear from you today. Get your thoughts on that. If you have any questions for Matt football related, I know SEC Media Day is going on. We got that going on. Big Ten Media Day, not far away.
Nope.
College football coming quickly.
I'm excited.
Any
about
kind
that.
Of football questions you might have for one Matt Wilhelm today. There goes Mo Pedman with another plate of food. 216-578-0850. You can tweet at the show at Browns_daily or at BGSU Gibbs. More when Cleveland Browns Daily continues on ESPN 850 WKNR.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Back here on Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR, Gibbs and Wilhelm. There goes another plate of food. Mo Pedman.
Jeez.
He's tearing
it
up. Keep on trucking.
No wonder he has
kitchen
flat tires.
Closes in 12 minutes. A lot of things going on out here in Berea today. We're taking your phone calls as well, 216-578-0850. If you missed the top of the show, Dez Bryant out for more than likely out for the year with that torn pec. Coming up at 1:30, our opponent preview, Ken Lavica from West Palm Beach joins us to preview the Dolphins. At 2 o'clock, the CBD replay with Nathan and Matt sitting down with Danny Shelton. Our little around the league coming your way at 2:30 as well. Around the league, taking a look at things, Matt, as you get ready for the season coming up here, rookies report next week.
Yes.
Early in the week. Am I correct on that? Do we have timing? Do we know?
What the 28th is what? Or the 29th when they – that is a Friday,
that's
correct?
That's the first day of training
I wouldn't
camp.
Be surprised if the rookies reported Tuesday or Wednesday. To get them in, you know, 48 to 72 hours ahead, there won't be any padded practices. It'll simply be a lot of – it'll be a lot like OTAs, a lot of meeting time, maybe an hour and 15 minutes out on the practice field, and then back in and then just a lot more meeting time and reviewing tape, even from OTAs and mini camp. And a lot of film of these guys doing what they're going to be asked to do. And it's the best refresher for them to get back into – it's get them back into football mode, because this is their – the pros, the guys who have played obviously 1 year or more, are used to reporting to camp and the expectations of what the coaches will put on them. Well, the rookies don't have that. So it's just a way to get them back in town, accounted for – assimilate them back into business mode as things can pick up. And you can see even rookies drafted first round, first, you know, second day, third day, if you can fall behind very quickly, if you don't take this serious and understand the ramifications of what coaches are trying to account for and get accomplished in training camp, you can fall behind. That's how you see middle to late round draft picks get cut, because coaches don't have time to teach and teach and teach and teach. You got to come in with that work, you know, that hard hat on. You've got to practice what they preach and execute and showcase what you can do in both the offense and defensive scheme to have a chance to make this football team. And I think I'm also excited for training camp. This it may not, in our eyes, a year ago we were talking about as much talent as we had last year and as much as guys were being paid. It was going to be a tough team to make. As we start whittling down that 53-man roster, I think this is going to be an interesting team to make, because it may not be hard, and I'm not discounting, you know, the type of team that we'll have, but it's going to be interesting because of the number of draft picks that we have. You know, the Jamar Taylor trade, how does he play in things? The depth that we're going to keep at certain positions, corner with Jamar Taylor and Gilbert and Dazier and those guys. It's going to be very interesting to see some of the small battles that will develop throughout training camp. It's something I'll be very in tune to.
Well, and now with Dez being gone for the most, more than likely the year, you know, do you now have to account for two additional spots on that D-line?
Sure.
To replace? Now the roster, okay, maybe I was going to keep four guys from this position. Now I'm only going to keep three because
right.
Now I've got to account for
and
that.
And the other thing that I wouldn't be surprised, and I know it may – It goes against the analytics and the mentality of putting together the team that Sashi Brown is going to build. But there's going to be some detriment to losing a guy like Dez Bryant. And the fastest way for them to probably get a productive body isn't waiting for Nassib to grow into that role or moving Cooper and changing all his technique. Is the same way, and I've been that guy – we're going to sign a guy that's either not on a roster right now, you know, who is not attractive to start camp with us, but he's going to wait. Or when those first wave of cuts come around, when
sure.
A guy gets a little too expensive, you know, his number goes back down after getting cut, you can sign him to a vet, you know, maybe a 6-7 year guy who's got experience in a 3-4 defense, especially at that 5 technique position, who we can sign to a 1 year vet minimum deal to get a guy who
it's a show me contract.
Puts his hit. You know, and I know we signed Randy Starks, you know, a year ago via free agency and paid him some decent money, but a guy like Randy Starks, who's been there and done that, who can come in and the game's not too big for him, and at least give us some productive snaps in the outset of the season. He'll come in with a businesslike mentality. He doesn't need the full training camp. He can learn on the run, and on week one, if we need to get 30 snaps out of him, we can, instead of having to rely on changing that change of position guy like Xavier Cooper or John Hughes playing 5 technique or Nassib playing more than he should as a rookie in week one.
I take a look at the roster and like you said, it's going to be interesting just because you have four rookie wide receivers.
Yeah.
Who makes that group? Who goes to the practice squad?
Sure.
And you know, who gets stolen off of a practice squad or, you know, whatever the case is going to be in that situation. You know, how many wide receivers do you keep? At running back, you know, you've got two that you know for sure. What happens with the rest of that room?
Sure.
Offensive line. What if Cam Irving doesn't pick up the center spot as well as they'd like, and now you've got to bring in another center?
Yeah.
I mean, it just literally everything could change daily.
It does. It's
maddening.
And to be very frank, though, if we were sitting in, and we'll talk, you know, with the Miami guy here shortly. If we were sitting in Miami, just like we talked to the guy in Baltimore, every team at this point has their own issues, a different set of issues. You list off the ones that are near and dear to our heart because it's our Cleveland Browns. But 75% of the NFL are going into camp going, these are our battles. This is the numbers, you know, that we like to keep at this position. Everybody's going through that. So I don't want it to make it seem like, oh, the Browns are, you know, got all these questions again. Everybody's got questions. You know, and that's why we're previewing these teams so that we can ask those questions about certain players, young and old, injuries. I mean, for God's sakes, I think, in my eyes, a healthy Baltimore Raven team could possibly win 9, 10, maybe 11 football games.
Totally agree.
They lose a few of the right guys, and they could have a 5-win season just like they did last year. You know, and they spent a lot in free agency. That, you know, Ozzie hasn't hit recently, but they had a good draft class in their eyes. And they can be a 5-win team or they can be a 10-win team. It all boils down to what players step up and rise from a young player standpoint and who can stay healthy from a vet standpoint.
And you take a look at a lot of questions need to be answered throughout the AFC North. I mean, you know, how did the Bengals recover after last year's debacle in the playoffs?
And they lost a lot.
They lost a lot of guys.
And their offensive coordinator,
yeah,
who's now our head coach.
Yeah, and was the top assistant.
Correct.
You know, he was the 1A to Marvin Lewis. Marvin
Correct.
Lewis would tell you that. So a lot of questions to be asked with regards to rosters and – you know, who's playing, who's doing what, and where we're going to get to. And so much, and like you said, and that's why we've been promoting it all offseason. It's going to be fun to watch this.
Yeah.
Because you could pick a different guy every day to watch.
Or a position group.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
And just like, I don't know what they're going to do.
Right.
I don't know how it's going to go down. I mean, we talked about it last week when you and Nathan were both out. The fourth preseason game could be Chicago-Cleveland, the game we all hate. It could be Cody Kessler v. Brian Hoyer.
Sure.
I'm watching that game.
Of course you are.
Now I'm watching. That fourth game, all the rookies that you know, are going to get a chance to shine.
Yeah, and I don't necessarily – even just talking – taking one position group, and we'll talk about the wide receivers, I don't necessarily know if any wide receiver throughout training camp, other than maybe Corey Coleman, throughout training camp and the three other preseason games can have – their role in this offense, their season-long role sewed up in that short a time, that they're going to get targets and a lot of reps in that fourth preseason game, continuing to prove to Hugh Jackson, to Al Saunders, and Chad Ochocinco, if he's still here by then, or if he's here at all, at that point, that they can play in the NFL. That's what we need to – we're going to play football and evaluate these young men. I think that's what I love about Hugh Jackson.
We will see. We will continue to get you ready for training camp, which is 2 weeks and 2 days away. Hard to believe, ready or not. A couple final vacations coming for Wilhelm and I. I think Zagura will be off a little bit next week. The band is back together tomorrow for one day. And Wilhelm's gone, and then I'm gone. And Nathan will be flying solo on Friday,
Good.
Monday, and Tuesday.
Good.
You should have fun with that. Coming up next, it is the Browns 2016 opponent preview here on Cleveland Browns Daily. Ken LaVica joins us from ESPN 106.3 when we continue on Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Hey, it's Munch, ECT tonight on KNR 7-9. Matt Wilhelm, the Kaiser checks in. Plus, I gotta know, am I the only one that doesn't like Big Poppy? Check me out tonight.
Oh, don't you dare look back. Just keep your eyes on me.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Back here with you on Cleveland Browns Daily here on ESPN 850 WKNR. Jason Gibbs, Matt Wilhelm. Zagura back tomorrow, finally. What was that, show number four of the month? Three of the
Maybe
month?
Maybe less, yes. Then he's going to grind out 3 days in a row.
3 days in a row. Then I think he's off again. Because it's you and me next Wednesday and Thursday. And then it's like Dino, Gribbs, and Wilhelm for like 3 days while I'm gone.
And Zagura's gone too.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Zagura's gone all over again.
He's got to get it in. Because once we're in, we're in.
I was going to say, our next vacation date might come in January. It might come during the bye week.
Yes.
We'll see. Sometimes that's a lot easier said.
The next holiday.
Yeah, that's a lot easier said than done around here because they play on every holiday.
They do.
So we got that going on. We'll be spending New Year's in Pittsburgh. Can't
yes,
wait.
Yes, you will. And Christmas will be here, right?
Christmas we
but
will
it's
be
Christmas
here.
Eve game.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Imagine now. How would you feel if you were playing for San Diego and you had to go back?
Would not be fun.
No.
Would not be. And I think
the NFL did San Diego no favors by scheduling.
No, they did not. But I think we did play one time around Christmas. It wasn't like directly on Christmas Eve or Christmas Day when I was with the Chargers here in Cleveland. It was like
I remember
utterly cold. But it was we won. Someone else lost, and we clinched the AFC West, so we were able to celebrate in the locker room here.
Yeah, and it was like 10 degrees.
Like minus 24 on the field wind chill, yeah.
Correct. Yes. Yep, I remember that. Antonio Gates.
Went off. Yes, he did.
In a very large way. Yeah. That's okay. He's from Kent State.
Yes.
At the time, it was fine.
Yes, it was.
All right, to the OBM hotline we go. It's time to continue the Browns' 2016 opponent previews, and we bring in Ken Lavica from ESPN 106.3, co-host of the home team from 10 to noon down there, covers the Dolphins for 106.3 and ESPNWestPalm.com. Lavica, happy Wednesday, my friend.
Happy Wednesday, gentlemen. Good to be with you, as always.
Yeah, man. Hey, long time no talk. It is... We're getting ready for the season. Hard to believe in 2 weeks we start training camps. And I figured down in Miami, after everything that's gone on with Dwayne Wade, the Dolphins might be a welcome break from talking about the NBA and what's next.
That's a funny joke.
Yes,
the Dolphins down here have been really sort of the laughing stock. And I hate to say it, but the way things are shaping up, and yes, new head coach Adam Gase promises all of this efficient offense, and this now in his fifth year is going to be when Ryan Tannehill makes the leap. But unfortunately, it has an insult to injury feel to it after D. Wade bolted for Chicago. There are just so many question marks with this team, and the major storyline, again, for the third consecutive offseason is Ryan Tannehill going to make that leap? And when you're in year five, that's usually a year three question. I think the question is pretty much answered. There are still many holding on to hope that Gase can be sort of the quarterback whisperer in 2016.
I guess so. And how has the acceptance, both from the fan base and the team itself, of Adam Gase as a head coach, with Stephen Ross sought out very early in the process, and has been a candidate for many jobs over the past couple of years?
It was very well received, and as you guys know, up there in Cleveland, this is such a quarterback league. There's such an onus on offense. You need someone with an offensive mind, and the Joe Philbin hire that predicated Gase was not only disastrous. At the time, you knew what was going to happen. You have a guy who had never called plays before, who was coming into that role, who, yeah, you could link him to Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay as the quote-unquote offensive coordinator, but there were no play-calling duties there. Now you go to Adam Gase, who 2 years ago helped orchestrate the most successful offense point-wise in NFL history with Denver, and then Jay Cutler last year, a quarterback rating over 90 for the first time in his career, and that Bears team was a very surprising, at least not unbearable, no pun intended, watch in 2015. So there is hope that Gase can bring some creativity to this offense. The Dolphins front office didn't do itself many favors, really, with no backfield to speak of right now. Lamar Miller going off to Houston, so they're going to need to figure that out. That's not going to help Tannehill. But Tannehill is someone who has put up some decent numbers in his time in Miami, but I think a lot of them are empty. He gets sacked way too much. He's been the most sacked quarterback in the league the last 3 years combined, and it's easy to blame it on the bad offensive line, but he doesn't have a feel for the pocket. He is inaccurate. Last year, the Dolphins were 30th in the league on third down. Those things are on Ryan Tannehill, so Gase certainly has his work cut out for him.
We're talking with Ken LaVica from ESPN 106.3, co-host of the home team from 10 to noon, covers the Dolphins for 106.3 and ESPNWestPalm.com. We talk about Gase, we talk about Tannehill. You know, it also starts with that wide receiver core, and you've got Landry, you got Stills, Devontae Parker, a guy that a lot of people were hoping would fall to the Browns last year. You know, his rookie season, 26 grabs, 494 yards, just three touchdowns, a very quiet season for him. A lot of expectations, I would think, on his shoulders to perform well this year.
There are, and Devontae Parker, if all goes as planned, should be the number one receiver on this team. And maybe it doesn't necessarily happen this year, but he has that type of talent. And the reason that Devontae's numbers were so minuscule last year is that he missed a good portion of the season after having to get a screw replaced in his foot, and that was an injury that kept him out of most of his senior year at Louisville. And so he was coming off of that. But once he did play, including making an incredible touchdown catch late in the year when the Dolphins' playoffs hopes were already dashed, he showed signs of being a target that Tannehill wanted to go to. He's got a big frame. He can go up and win the football. So when you talk about the Dolphins' offense and who's catching the football, Jarvis Landry is always going to be the first name that comes up going into the season. But, yeah, you're right. There are big expectations for Devontae Parker because he's finally healthy and he should come into this year and be able to put in a full season for them. Kenny Stills was a disappointment. He was one of the prized free agent acquisitions last year for the Dolphins. You had Sue, you had Stills. There was great feeling around them, and Stills just never really got super involved in the offense, and that's on play callers, that's on Tannehill, and I think Stills with Gase, they can open up this offense a little bit, is certainly going to be improved and certainly going to show numbers like he had in New Orleans.
Another free agent that was signed, I think, in that same year was from Cleveland here, Jordan Cameron. How does he project to have this kind of year and to become a weapon to kind of control the middle for Ryan Tannehill?
Yeah, with Jordan Cameron, that was a name where the Dolphins didn't really think that it was going to be available to him, and all of a sudden, there he is, and there was a lot of promise for him, and he was effective at the start of the season, but again, injuries caught up with Jordan Cameron, but when you look at him and you look at that tight end position, the Dolphins have been lacking for a while, and Cameron should be significantly more of a weapon than he was last year, and like I said, injuries really sort of caught up to him. That said, if you're going to trust, if you're a Dolphins fan, that Adam Gase is going to come in and you're going to see the same things that you saw in Denver, the same things that you saw in Chicago, and how he got everybody involved, if Jordan Cameron does not have a good year, then that suggests to me that the Dolphins aren't going to have a good year. And everything we've talked about with Tannehill, especially on third down and those mid-range downs, Cameron has to get involved, has to be a part of what the Dolphins are trying to do, or it's going to be the same story and the same lower third of the NFL in third down conversions and extending drives.
Now, another very interesting storyline that's probably consumed probably the last 2 months, maybe not in the last couple of weeks, but the draft of Laremy Tunsil with the the mask picture, him dropping in the draft. How has he done in minicamp and OTAs, and is there an expectation for him to start day one there in Miami?
Well, Tunsil's done everything right, and I know that especially in NFL media, and now it's trickled into all sports media, we like to make sure that a guy presents the proper PR face after crisis, and everything is so out there, the social media age, and Tunsil was a victim of the social media age, and there are people trying to come after him. There are stories that it's his estranged father, and the photo of the gas mask bong, or the video was put out there by him. He denies it. It's a whole mess. But in that same vein, Tunsil, throughout OTAs, throughout the mini camps, one, he addressed it which was great. And he did it maturely, didn't do it in a joking manner, just came out and said, hey, this happened. I'm here to work. And he's looked good. He's massive. And the Dolphins' offensive line, which has been so putrid, I do believe is going to need him to be able to play and possibly be a starter week one against Seattle if they're going to have success along that line that, again, was besieged by injuries a season ago. There's a common trend here. But I've been impressed with Tunsil, and it's easy for me to sit here and say, oh, what a question mark this guy could end up being. Character issues. I genuinely don't think that there are character issues the Dolphins are worried about. I thought that the pick, and as far as Tunsil fell, the Dolphins had no choice but to pick him and then deal with the fallout and the aftermath that would come with drafting Laremy Tunsil. And I think they've handled it well. He's handled it well. And it's a total non-story now. So much so that in training camp, because he addressed it in minicamp, it's not even going to be an issue. I think this was a PR win for both him and the Dolphins. So good pick, and I think he could contribute. He's got the frame. He is NFL ready.
All right, so we switch over to the defensive side of the football, and as much of a story and media frenzy that Tunsil creates, same with Ndamukong Suh. And
yep.
I don't know whether to like this guy. I don't know whether to hate this guy. I wonder if he's a locker room killer. He rubs me the wrong way. And I think that he's got an enormous amount of talent, but he can single-handedly destroy a team. How's his attitude been with Adam Gase this offseason?
His attitude has been fine, and Ndamukong Suh, and I think part of where that comes from, and I know what you're saying, it's the absurd amount of money that he makes, and especially the lack of production, and a frustrated Ndamukong Suh and how vocal he was about how it was his defense, and his defense needed to perform when things got real bad for the Dolphins last year. I think he was evidence of how fractured that locker room was, but I'm not sure he was necessarily the cause of the fracture in the locker room. That was just not a good locker room when things went badly. Again, as you guys have seen so many times up there in Cleveland, and has happened so many times down here. Suh, his lack of sacks, his lack of production, at least with what we are used to seeing when he was with Detroit, that's not all his fault. There certainly were some times last year where you looked at his level of play and looked at how he was conducting himself on a play-to-play basis, and you said, boy, this is a little bit of a problem, especially with the bank vault that the Dolphins threw at him. But I want to see one more year of Suh before I start making generalizations that this was not a good free agent move for the Dolphins, that they did pay way too much for him, that this isn't going to work out. With a completely new coaching staff, not one that was already 1 foot out the door, Philbin's staff, into Dan Campbell's piecemeal staff that he rearranged as interim coach a couple of games in. This is an actual NFL coaching staff in my mind that the Dolphins have, the first one in a while. So I want to see Suh under that in a good system before I make a declaration about him. But I know what you're saying with that, and it's easy to dislike Suh because, well, stomping on Aaron Rodgers and being a dirty player, and yes, he is a dirty player. That's the answer to that question. He won't admit it and say, no, that's how I play. It's my intensity. He is a dirty player, so I totally understand.
Now, a last question for you, and this is on the defensive side of the ball again. Now, you guys have signed Mario Williams via free agency. He was had an underwhelming stop with the Buffalo Bills, and some of that had to do with scheme, some of that with effort. What are your expectations for him? And then even on the other side, Cameron Wake, on that one-year deal in Miami as well.
Yeah, and Cam Wake is someone coming off of injury, the first very significant injury of his career. So I think that it was an absolute necessary signing. Obviously, when you lose a name like Olivier Vernon, the Dolphins need Mario Williams to be an impact player. He needs to be better than he was in Buffalo. I still think that he can be an impact pass rusher. The Dolphins are banking that he's going to be an impact pass rusher, but that's one of the positions where the Dolphins got worse in the offseason. With Wake coming off of injury and then losing Olivier Vernon to New York, pressure's on Mario Williams. This is his chance to show that late stages in Buffalo was not a fluke, that he can still be a pretty elite player and get to the quarterback. The Dolphins are really, really hoping or it's going to be a pretty long year on the defensive side of the ball. Really the only notable player, Rashad Jones, the back end of that defense and safety, a Pro Bowler from a year ago, but you lose Brent Grimes, and, well, fortunately, you lose his wife as well with them going off to Tampa Bay. She is the absolute worst, the unmitigated worst. I mean, that is, you can see, the Dolphins are not sad. While Brent Grimes was talented, had a rougher year last year than we were accustomed to, just getting her off the books, per se, is one less headache they have to deal with. But, yeah, the Dolphins defense, there are some certainly some question marks there. When going into last year, we kept saying, man, this pass rush could be really elite. Didn't turn out that way, and now you're missing some big pieces from a year ago.
All right, one last question, Ken, before I let you go, and we appreciate your time today. Getting off to a good start, especially with everything that's gone down here today with Tom Brady, it looks like if he wants to appeal everything, he's got to go to the Supreme Court. He's got 90 days. Otherwise, he will miss the first four games of the year. Opportunity knocks in the AFC, and then you guys get a fantastic schedule where you start at Seattle, at New England, home for Cleveland, and then at Cincinnati. How important is it to get off to a good start, if you can, against that first month of the season?
Well, if you get through that first month and the Dolphins are above 500, you can at least start to think, boy, yeah, Adam Gase, he knows what he's doing. This is a pretty solid Dolphins team. And Brady is definitely going to help. The Dolphins last year did not win a game within the division. That needs to change, or else they're going to be going through another 6-10, 7-9. But at Seattle, at New England, and even without Brady, the way the Dolphins haven't won in Foxborough since 2008. That was the Tom Brady ACL year. So I still am not going to chalk that up to a possible Dolphins win or even competitive, even without Tom Brady. The Browns at home, you feel okay about that. But then at the Bengals, you've got three playoff teams in your first 4 weeks. It is incredibly important to get off to that quick start because then you send a message. But it's very easy if you start 1-3 or 0-4 for those doubts that have crept in so many times over the last 15, 20 years to really start hurting that locker room again, and the questions start popping up again that this Dolphins team, a lot of hype, Tannehill, a lot of hype, not a lot of substance to them.
All right, Ken LaVica from ESPN 106.3, co-host of the home team from 10 to noon and covers the Dolphins for 106.3 and ESPNWestPalm.com. Appreciate your time, my friend. Give my best to your fam. I know first time being a dad, and I hope you're getting at least 3 hours of sleep a night.
Yeah, getting 3 hours, not much more after that. Everyone says, oh, the newborn stage is so great. I just want to fast forward to, like, kindergarten. So thank you for the kind words. I appreciate it. And great being with you guys. Thank you so much.
All right, Ken. Thank you very much. Continued success. We'll talk soon. That's Ken LaVica from down in West Palm covering the Dolphins and continuing our Browns 2016 opponent preview. Tomorrow, the Washington Redskins. Our good friend John Keim will join the show. Cleveland resident, former Cleveland resident, and works for ESPN's yes. NFL Nation in Washington. He will join us to preview the Redskins. We have the Patriots on Friday, and I can't remember who we have at the start of next week because I'm out of town. I'm on vacation.
Somebody else's responsibility.
Yeah, it's on me. I got to just finalize a couple more of those. Jason Gibbs, Matt Wilhelm here in Berea. Just saw the truck go by with the porta potties. Training camp right around the corner on ESPN 850 WKNR.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Back here on Cleveland Browns Daily, quick hour one. Coming up in hour two, the CBD replay. Nathan and Matt will replay an interview from early May with Danny Shelton. Around the league at 2:30. Nathan is back tomorrow. Nathan and Matt together tomorrow. Then Matt's on vacation along with me for like the next 5 days.
I'm just trying to get my days in, man.
That's use it or lose it in our company.
That's where I'm at. It's take it or work for free.
Yeah. I'm off for 5 days. I work for 48 hours with you, and then I'm gone for another 6 days. And I come back, and it's training camp. Ready or not.
It'll go by fast.
I'm running around like a chicken with my head cut off trying to make sure everything's all set up for us. It's 2 weeks from Friday. So thanks again to Ken LaVica for joining us from ESPN 106.3. You know, we're going through – I asked him that schedule question, you know, that tough first month. And he goes through everybody. He gets to Cleveland. And he goes, yeah, we feel okay about that. I really – memo to the league that's playing the Browns this year. You're going to get a much better effort from the Browns than you have in years past.
Yeah, and I think while the Dolphins on paper resemble a team that has an owner and general manager who likes to spend money, right? As you list off Sue and Mario Williams and Cameron Wake's making a lot of money, and you look at that's the one question that he kind of touched upon it, but the real issue is the Miami Dolphins don't have a running back. Which is going to be hard to run an offense.
No one.
Okay? Like, guys you've never heard of.
Aj?
Yeah.
Hold on. Let's get his numbers up. 49 carries for a .187 and a touchdown.
Correct.
That's good and terrible.
Right. So my point is, you list out Kenny Stills, he had an underwhelming. Devontae Parker, still up in the air, looking to have a big second year. Jarvis Landry is a good player, borderline great player, who could have a breakout year, I think. And then Leonte Carew, who was Nathan's guy all pre-draft, out of Rutgers, they drafted him, I think probably mid rounds. But a lot of that has to do with the development of Ryan Tannehill. And as he said, he's been underwhelming. All those quarterbacks come around year three. Well, he's in year five, and there's still questions about him. I think there's questions about the defense, and I think it's one that we can steal simply by our effort. If our young players and our schemes win that day, we can beat the Miami Dolphins. And I'm not saying steal. We can win the football game by playing the Cleveland Browns will, from this point forward, play the games on Sundays with a different mentality, with a different swagger about them because of how prepared they are and the head coach that leads them on the field. We have a chance. And even in talking to, Bob Civic, one of the lead dickhead guys here, I just said, our fans need the opportunity to walk into First Energy Stadium and know and believe that it's 50-50. And the only way we can see that is through the effort and the preparation of Hugh Jackson and the 53 guys that walk into that stadium each week.
It is amazing, and it's daunting when you see their defensive front seven. But at the same time, that defense, there's a lot of guys on that defense that have missed a lot of games here recently with injuries.
Yeah.
Kiko Alonso's coming back, but you're going to get a full season out of him. When was the last time that happened?
Never.
Exactly. Cameron Wake, first big injury. Which Mario Williams is going to show up? Is it going to be the motivated Mario Williams? I mean, on paper, they got a great-looking defense.
That's what I mean. It's like they've got heavy salaries. They've got a bunch of names like that we recognize, and you're going to go, whoa, I don't know if we can beat them. But if Sue plays like a nobody, which he did in a Dolphins uniform, if Cameron Wake's not quite himself because he's coming off an injury, if Mario Williams is in a position where he can do whatever he wants, which he wasn't allowed to do in Buffalo, he became a nobody, a very unproductive player, I think you can take advantage of those guys.
Yeah, we shall see. That'll be the Browns' Week 3 matchup. So, they open their September with at Philly, which – again, I've gone on record and said is a very winnable home opener or a season opener.
How healthy Baltimore is.
Yep.
As our
and
home
that's a
opener,
home game.
As a home game. And then at Miami, and we're not saying the Browns are going to start 3-0. We're saying those are three winnable football games that if we see what we think we should be seeing out of this Hugh Jackson led football team, by the time that Chicago Bears preseason rolls around, we're healthy. Guys are resting. Guys are getting it. You can go to those two places and the one game at home and say, if it matches up properly, if Philly's still a show, and the Ravens aren't healthy and Miami's got these big name players who aren't producing, you can win some of those games.
Yeah. 2-1 coming out of September would not be a bad thing, especially with two or three of those on the road.
And I like RG3 going back to Washington.
Yeah. We'll have the Redskins preview tomorrow with John Keim. All right, break time for us. Top of the hour, 1 hour to go. Coming up next, it's the CBD replay on ESPN 850 WKNR.